Well, good morning. My name's Russ. I am the one, according to Joelle, and she has been here longer than. That is true. However, I'm a little concerned that as we say that, more and more it begins to sound like the same as older than dirt. Just had that feel, and I just wanted to kind of get that out of the way. Point of privilege, there is something that is older than dirt. It's our mountains. And they have been, and they have inspired, and they have terrified, and they have challenged us. And last night, I got to be to greet one of our own members and watch on television. Usually, when you watch the news and someone's at the top of the news, it's not a good thing. This time, it was a very good thing. Dave Arnett has been climbing those mountains, and in his climbing began, kind of caught on after he climbed a couple of them, this challenge of climbing the tallest peaks in all seven continents. And last night he got home after having completed the seventh of those continents. There are like less than 500 people who have ever done that. And that is just such a wonderful thing to get to celebrate. Dave, you're around here somewhere. There he is. And I just wanted to say, wow. Wow. It has been not only a challenge, obviously, for Dave, but his family. And so congratulations to him, to Victoria, to Catherine, to Sarah, the whole family. What a fun thing to get to gather around and just note on a day like today. Congratulations. And it's good to see you. See you back. See you in the news. It's wonderful. Hey, this morning I'm going to talk about fear. I want you to think about, remember a time when you were afraid as a kid. A time when you were terrified. Can you think of a time? Can you remember what it felt like? Maybe it was sitting on top of the high dive. Maybe it was afraid of the dark. Maybe it was afraid of being left. Maybe it was afraid and terrified of what was under your bed or in the closet. Maybe it was afraid of the monsters that maybe were at school, the bullies and the people who were there to terrify you or to put you down. Maybe it was something even deeper and darker. Maybe it was a dog the next door. Maybe it was a snake. Maybe it was clowns. Can you remember when it was that you were terrified? Do you remember what that felt like? It is a biological response. When we say we went cold or we were frozen with fear, it's with good reason. There are things, and we know now, that that's not just in our imagination. The whole body shifts and the things change around us. There are all kinds of symptoms. And most of the time, we get over it. Most of the time, as we grow up, we learn to figure that out. We take into consideration all the different responses, and we're able to figure that out and move on. I'm still not crazy about snakes, but they don't terrify me quite the same way I did. But then there's those times when that fear stays with us, and it changes us. When it is long-term fear, when fear becomes ingrained in our bones, all kinds of things happen. There's cardiovascular problems, there's gastrointestinal problems, there's ulcers. Memory doesn't work as well. There becomes this thing that there becomes damages to parts of our brain so that we're not even able to regulate. And so, in other words, as fear builds on itself, we're less and less able to handle fear. Think of PTSD. Think of the things that get into our lives, and so therefore, we're not only afraid of the thing, or we're traumatized by the thing itself. Now we're traumatized by all the things that are represented and that represent it. And now we no longer have fear. Fear has us. And we're terrified. It has become the defining issue of our life. It has become the defining issue of our identity. Today we're continuing a series on wilderness and what does it mean to walk into the wilderness? What does it mean to get our bearings, to find our way? And one of the chief factors of any wilderness, that unknown, is the fear that is there. So today I want us to try and recognize its effects. Even though we don't like to admit it, it's there. I'd like to take a look in our passage and see what are some of the things, how it affects us, and what are some of the remedies that are there. Last week we have been following
the Exodus, that exit out of Egypt, people who were slaves who were then going to the Promised Land. I showed this map last week, and the top two routes are obviously the easiest, the quickest, and the most efficient. And they are not the ones that the children of Israel took, because the work that needed to be done was not just get there fast, not just get there comfortably. There was work to be done. As they started out, it was said that God said, if I send them the easy way, they're going to run into armies and they're going to get afraid. They're going to become afraid and they're going to want to go back to Egypt. And so I'm going to send them on the roundabout way, if you remember. And so they took that red route, as best we can tell, from at least from some of the notations in the story. They went all over the place. But then we come finally to the edge of what is be called the Promised Land, the land where they will flourish, the land where they stop being people who are slaves and stop being afraid and now get to walk into the land as whole people. In the Old Testament, in Hebrew, all words are pictures. And it's always struck me as interesting that the word for salvation literally means able to walk around freely and unafraid. Now, to you and me, that may not sound like much. But to the children of Israel, if they want to paint a picture of what does it mean to be made whole and to revel in the peace and the presence of God, salvation is the ability to walk around freely, unhindered. And this is their day, and Jordan read the passage, and you know that what they did as soon as they got there was they balked and said, we can't do that. And why? Because they were still afraid. Before in Egypt, they were imprisoned by the outside of their oppressors, and now we find a people who are imprisoned from the inside, and it's a much worse prison. They can't get out of it. And so they begin to go through, and at the edge, and if you remember the story, what begins to happen when fear embeds not just in an individual, but a whole group, things start to happen. They begin to catastrophize and exaggerate. Instead of saying, yeah, they're very strong, so no, everybody's giant there. Everybody is tall. They begin to say, oh, that land that had all that fruit and all that good stuff, no, that doesn't can't even feed themselves. They are so scared they can't see reality anymore. It becomes irrational. They're giants there. We are like grasshoppers in their eyes. That's how it feels to us. That terror that's on top of a diving board that's underneath your covers, it begins to permeate not just individuals, but the entire community. And then, as it always happens, we begin to scapegoat. Moses and Aaron, they're the ones to blame. Why did they bring us here? Why would they do this to us? And then, of course, this panic that God has abandoned us. Why would God do this to us? I know. Let's elect a leader who will take us back to Egypt. And this sounds almost comical to us 3,200 years later. How could people do that? But we're going to find, I believe, that it's pretty current and pretty relevant. And it is still the same idea that God has abandoned us. Moses pleads, as it gets retold in the book of Deuteronomy, Moses pleads with them and he says, I tried to relieve your fears. I said, don't be terrified of them. God, your God, is leading the way. He's fighting for you. You saw with your own eyes what he did in Egypt. You saw what he did in the wilderness, how God, your God, carried you as a father carries his child, carried you the whole way until you arrived here. But now that you're here, you won't trust God, your God. They chose the misery that they had become accustomed to, of wandering aimlessly in the wilderness. A whole generation is turned back. A whole generation is not able to walk into the land, because it's not just the land itself. It is the ability to walk around freely, unhindered. But they were anything but. It didn't matter where they were. They were still slaves. They were still imprisoned by their own fear. Families that will not face fear become imprisoned to the past. Communities, nations become gripped and controlled by fear. What does it look like today? We don't go physically wandering around a wilderness, but there's a different kind of wilderness that we walk around. It goes underground, this fear thing. We don't even call it fear. It masks as so many other things, but it gets into our bones. It masks as anger and hatred and hyperbole, scapegoating, vitriol, intolerance, but it is still at its core fear. It's her latest book, Brené Brown. It's called Braving the Wild. And she talks about this thing that has gripped, that she notes as people tell their stories, thousands and tens of thousands of people as they tell stories and the things that start coming out over and over again. And she talks about it in one part of her book. She says, we've sorted ourselves into factions based on our politics and ideology. We've turned away from one another and toward blame and rage. We're lonesome, untethered, and scared. So damned scared. All you have to do is listen. Listen to the conversations that go on. Listen to the way we talk about things today. Listen to the way we talk about things like immigration. Listen to the way we talk about protests. Listen to the way we talk about free speech on campuses. Listen to the way we talk about anything or talk about nothing. Because we can't talk about these things. They have become flashpoints. They have become places where there is hyperbole. Or as Brown goes on to say, rather than coming together and sharing our experiences through song and story, we are screaming at one another from further and further away. Rather than dancing and praying together, we're running from one another. Rather than pitching wild and innovative ideas that could potentially change everything, we're staying quiet and small in our bunkers and loud in our echo chambers. We're staying small and quiet in our bunkers, and we are staying loud in our echo chambers. Finally, she says, I can only conclude our world is in a collective spiritual crisis. That spiritual crisis where we are disconnected from one another and from God, that inherent and holy connection that is ours because of our creation and because of our God, it has become disconnected, and we have become a people who are gripped from fear. And suddenly a story 3,200 years old about some people, a completely different time, different culture, different place, suddenly it becomes very relevant. The identifying and defining issue of their day is right here in front of us, and it threatens to become the defining issue of our day as well. Because whether we want to call it or not, underneath all of this is this sense of fear. And it's killing us. Well, if it is relevant from the past of describing our condition, there is also things there then that we ought to listen to. Because then it might just help us so that we don't have to spend a whole generation wandering around in circles, getting further and further away and more disconnected from one another. And I think the first thing is this. We first just need to recognize that we are afraid. We need to recognize the places in our life in which we have fear. It is there. It is natural. It's not just a point of shame, and so we can't talk about it. When we can't talk about it, we push it under the surface. There's so many quotes about fear. I picked a couple out for this week that from people who understood fear. Most of us know Franklin Roosevelt, the president who at the key time said, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself, and he was right. But he was more right than we know, because here's the man who had adult polio and saw his whole life collapse in around him, deep depression for years, and climbed out of that and was able to talk about the fears that he had experienced in his own life and say, men aren't prisoners of fate. They are prisoners of their own mind. lot of people wandering in the wilderness who would have understood that. There still are today. And so it is a matter of being able to say, for what we are afraid. A few weeks ago, we handed these out. There's still some on the table if you'd like to take them. Usually, you're marking about the things that you saw that were good and bad or helpful and not helpful. This week, if you have these or if you'd like to pick one up, I would invite you to do something different. I would invite you to note the times and the triggers that cause you to be afraid. And then things that gave you courage. What were the conversations? What are the confrontations that you find yourself in? You find yourself just kind of going a little cold inside. What are the things in your life where you found yourself wanting to avoid? Topics you'd rather not talk about. With people you'd rather not be with. Just note those down. See if there becomes a bit of a pattern. And see the things that then gave you courage. What were the words that were spoken? What were the things that were done? It's one way of beginning to recognize just how this rumbles around in our own soul. And as we do, we begin to realize this great truth, that fear is not the opposite of courage, and fear is not the obstacle to courage. Fear is the necessary, is the occasion. It's the necessary condition for courage. It is there. It is there. That's the boundary. That's the thing we face if we, in fact, are going to become free. As we do, we begin to respond. We begin to respond to the places and the conditions. We talked about this cloud and this pillar that kept following them or kept leading them, and that over the last several weeks, the whole point of every day was just to respond to the work that was in front of you. What was given to you? What were you supposed to do? Sometimes you're supposed to get up and move. Sometimes you're supposed to stay and just stay right where you are. It seems to me that working with fear, it's the same way. If we're aware of the fear, if we're aware of what's going on, then we are able to do something a little more creative. Winston Churchill knew something about fear and the fear of a nation and how fear could grip a whole people. And he had many rousing quotes about fear and speeches about fear. But I thought one of the wisest things I ever saw that he did was courage is what it takes to stand up and speak, and courage is also what it takes to sit down and listen. I wonder this week where you need to stand up and speak. Where is this week that you and I need to sit down and listen? Not listen so we know how to argue back, but to truly understand. To understand the fear that is underlying. To understand the concern, the experience that is underneath the words that we find offensive or the actions that we find mystifying. Do we have the courage to actually engage and sit there and listen? If we do, then we are able actually to do the third thing, which I think is resist. Do the kinds of things. Don't be afraid. Fear not, which is the number one commandment in the Bible, is not just a commandment. It's an invitation. It's an invitation to a different way to live. And it says, don't give in to and don't be part of the things that make for fear. Today's a big day. I'm not talking about Super Bowl. Today is a huge day. It's my grandson's fourth birthday. No. Thank you. It is also, however, the birthday of Rosa Parks. Rosa Parks would have been 105 today. Rosa Parks was that, if you remember the story, here was a brave woman. Here was a woman who was a seamstress, but who had also worked for the NAACP for 15 years before the famous incident on the bus, where she got on a bus and didn't realize she had been avoiding this bus driver for 12 years because of who he was and how he handled his bus, and knew it would always be confrontational, but she wasn't thinking one day, and got on the bus and noticed he was driving and decided to sit down and knew what was coming and refused to give up her seat. This was a scary thing back then. She was arrested. She could have been much worse. Bus drivers were allowed to carry weapons in those days, and they were allowed to use it to keep the peace on their bus. She was arrested. She was arrested again because she went back again. And that one action of merely sitting, not violent, not confrontational, but sitting and demanding the dignity of her own life, had reverberations. On the one hand, after 5 weeks, she was let go of her job because the reverberations got too big. She was let go by her white employers. She was shunned for 5 weeks by her black employees. They wouldn't talk to her because fear had set in. The boycotts began to start, and it got bigger and bigger. She couldn't find a job, but she stayed with who she was. And that one act of courage gave courage to others. Fear is contagious, but so is courage. So is doing just the little things that's right in front of you, doing the things that no longer give in to fear. Finally, she had to move. She had to leave. She was sick. She couldn't get a job. She couldn't take care of herself. She didn't have health, anything for medicine. She had to go move with some relatives where she lived the rest of her life in Detroit. We celebrate the 105th birthday today of someone who was not afraid to do the right thing. You must never be fearful about what you are doing when it's right, she said. I hope for a better world for my 4-year-old grandson. It will be better because of people like Rosa Parks, people who did the right thing that was in front of them, people who let that one thing reverberate and let others, that courage, become contagious. All of that is the world that we are hoping for our children, our grandchildren, other people's grandchildren, the children who have yet to be born, all of those who are yet to come. Wouldn't it be great if we could leave them a world that is more courageous and more and less afraid? And it begins, I believe, with this act right here at this table. Because the last thing, or maybe the first thing, is to rest. It is to rest in the presence of God. Moses said, this God who was with you by day and by night, by cloud and by fire, leading you wherever you went, that carried you, this God is with you. We don't have a cloud and we don't have fire. We have bread and we have a cup, and they do the same thing. They testify to the presence of God that we get to rest in. It is at this table that Jesus was with his disciples before all hell was going to break loose. And people were afraid and they were scared. And in the longer version of this table, Jesus was able to say, look, in the world you're going to have many tribulations, you're going to have many troubling things, but don't be afraid, because I've overcome the world. Which means this. This table is radically countercultural today, because this is a table that, rather than scattering ourselves off from one another, this is the table where we join together, and it doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter whether you're on the right or the left or the middle. It doesn't matter whether your politics are conservative, liberal, or something else. It doesn't matter what party you are a part of. It doesn't matter what ethnicity you are. It doesn't matter any of those things. Here is the one thing that calls us together. This becomes an act of resistance. It becomes an act of faith, because it is also the place where we say, and this is where we have the reminder of God's presence in our life. Fear is perhaps the biggest issue we face today. It is real. But if we can come to this table today, if we can begin here again, if we can come to this table and recognize that we are here doing something that is bold today, rather than dividing ourselves off and sorting ourselves out, that we are coming and joining, if we can come and proclaim the very presence of God in our midst, in the midst of our fear, then we have good news to share. And then fear becomes not the obstacle and not the opposite, but the very occasion to experience the presence of God anew. Let's pray. We don't like to admit we are scared. It makes us feel like little kids. It makes us feel out of control. But oh God, there's so many places in our life where underlying we are still scared. And by not admitting it, it begins to control us. And so we bring ourselves and we bring our fears today. We bring our fears to this table, to the one who said, "Be not afraid. I've overcome the world." We bring our hopes of what is yet to be. We bring them here to experience again your presence. In Christ, in whose name we pray. Amen.